Mark Collier for Thomas Matters Radio in the palatial Cameron Estates here with David Cameron, Sarah Cameron, and Brian Sand. We're going to talk today about the Kentucky presidential caucus last Saturday on March the 5th. We're also going to talk about the four special elections that Kentucky just had tonight. But first, here's a word from Omega Processing Solutions. Hey, David, when's the last time that you heard somebody that was excited about your business? Do they like to say positive things or negative things?
Absolutely positive.
Positive. Well, you're a lucky one because it doesn't happen a lot. But here's Elaine from All Women PLLC. She's a local physician, and she says, I've worked with Dan and Julianne, and they have been super in helping us meet our needs. And in fact, everyone that I've worked with, especially our customer service staff, has been very knowledgeable and always willing to help. If you're not receiving this kind of service from your credit card processing solutions, give Omega Processing Solutions a call, 866-888-9724, 866-888-9724, extension 7, or visit them at omegap.com. And obviously, David Cameron is doing a wonderful job at his job at, where do you work, David?
I work at Cal USA.
And you're an attorney.
I am. I'm a patent attorney for them in their R&D division.
Also a candidate for Fort Thomas City Council. You want to give a quick plug on that?
Sure, that's right. Yes, I'm a first-time candidate here in the beautiful city of Fort Thomas, Kentucky. I'm looking forward to meet more people during my campaign this summer and this fall.
Sarah Cameron, how are you?
I am great.
You are a podcast veteran now.
I am. Number two. Here we go.
So give me the largest compliment that you got from the podcast. From your hometown, maybe?
Yeah. You know, it was funny. A lot of people from Eastern Kentucky tuned in to the Fort Thomas Matters podcast.
Well, we certainly appreciate that. We got a good turnout on Saturday, and I would like to think that a lot of it had to do with that.
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, you've got some loyal listeners.
I do, and we certainly appreciate them. And by the way, if you want to look at any of the archives, you can do so on iTunes. Just search Fort Thomas Matters. Of course, you could do that at the top of FortThomasMatters.com at the podcast tab at the top. I also have Brian Sand, Fort Thomas resident and Renaissance Board Chair. He was also at the primary caucus in a different capacity. Brian, how are you?
Doing very well. Thank you for having me.
So talk real quick about your capacity that you were there for at the primary caucus.
I was at the caucus on Saturday representing Senator Marco Rubio. And so I was there to kind of just help people, inform them on you know, the issues and where Marco Rubio stands on his platforms and, you know, any last minute decisions that folks had to make and, you know, to kind of sway them one way or the other. So that was kind of the reason why I was there.
So we're going to have some perspective from Brian, from Sarah, David, and myself, who were all three caucus volunteers. But first, what I want to do is give you a little bit of breaking news. It's not too breaking. As of maybe an hour ago or 2 hours ago, the four special elections that took place, which basically would have swayed the balance of power from the Democrats, which has been controlled for nearly a century, to the Republicans, which seemed like it was kind of going to happen back in November. There was a huge government Republican wave.
Right.
That did not happen. Democrats won three of four seats in those four special elections. David Cameron, first question to you. Instant analysis. What do you think?
Yeah, so this actually widens the lead of the Democrats in the House 53-47. It's a little unexpected, I think. Governor Bevin came out really strong here in the last 2 weeks supporting these candidates. I think the Republicans had a lot of really strong candidates, but they faced a little headwinds in some of these districts that were heavily Democrat by voter registration.
So, just to recap real fast, Jeffrey Taylor of Hopkinsville, Chuck Tackett of Georgetown, Lou Nichols of Greenup County were the three Democrats that won. And then in Central Kentucky, Daniel Elliott of Danville, he took over Harmon's spot.
Yeah, Dan Elliott, I'd like to give a plug for him, especially because he's a young Republican. I interned with him.
Are you name dropping?
What? Yeah, I am. I have a connection to a new representative in the House, in the Kentucky House. No, but
lobbyist? Do you hear Sarah Cameron?
No. I am not a lobbyist. So don't start any rumors, Mark. But Dan Elliott, he's He is, like I said, he interned with me, so I think he's probably about 30 years old. So I'm always excited when a young person gets elected and we have that kind of representation down in Frankfort.
Yeah, I think it's cool, especially in Northern Kentucky. We had a forum event that I helped moderate where we had 9 young, you know, politicians under 40 years old. And to kind of transition a little bit away from the special election, what do you think that says, Brian, about having some, you know, young people in our region that have taken hold of wanting to, you know, give back in a public interest manner?
Well, I think it shows that young folks are really excited about what's going on, and they think that they have an opportunity to really affect and make changes on the way of life and the way they want to kind of go and grow as a state and, I guess, as a region, because you had a couple of people there from Cincinnati. It's really exciting to kind of bring new and fresh ideas. I think some of the opportunity there is, you know, it's sometimes, you know, you got some folks that have been in office for a really long time, kind of get stagnant. And so it's kind of nice to get some fresh blood in there and kind of some people that, you know, either are younger and kind of just have some more energy about them. And I think that's a good thing. So, I think there's people more importantly are just excited about being able to make a difference.
And obviously all 4 people at this table right here kind of, I think, feel that way too. David, let me ask you this. So these people that have won this special election, they're going to be in I guess for the next, until the next election, which would be not even a year really. Does this speak, and the Democrats right now are coming out and saying that this kind of speaks to, you know, a repudiation of Matt Bevin cutting educational spending and healthcare. Do you agree with that statement?
I don't necessarily agree with that statement. I think each individual district faces its own challenges. If you, example, look up in Greenup and Boyd County, that's a heavily union district, and I know that from the beginning, the Republican candidate there was going to face an uphill battle. You had a heavy union presence, a heavy union turnout. Additionally, the Republicans were being asked to vote twice in less than 3 or 4 days. It's a lot, asking a lot of people. I think this November, we're going to see a lot of straight ticket balloting that will really turn it around and win the House for the Republicans.
So, Sarah, we're at 53-47 right now.
Yeah.
Let's say that the Republicans were able to even it up and get it to 50-50. Do you think that that would have made a big deal?
I think it would have made a huge deal. It would have sent...
Explain that a little bit.
I think it would have sent a message to... definitely sent a message to Governor Bevin. A vote of confidence, I think, in his policies. So I guess I agree with Dave in that each individual district, you had to look at that separately, and especially his example with the union voters in Greenup County. But Governor Bevin campaigned really hard. And even last night, or yesterday, I guess, he posted that video that got over 10,000 shares in 4 hours. It was the video where he went to the House of Representatives to see if they were debating the budget. And
it was like 11 o'clock in the middle of the day.
Yeah, it was 11 o'clock on Monday, and he's gotten a lot of criticism for selecting that time. But I think, you know, the message that he sent was, okay, everyone, we're getting ready to have this special election where we can change who controls the hours of operations of the House of Representatives. And so if we could have gotten Greg Stumbo out of leadership, I think that things would have really changed, and that would have happened with 50-50. So, I'm a little disappointed tonight. I know Jonathan Miller, he's a big Democratic pundit and a former treasurer, mm-hmm. and he made a comment tonight through Twitter, this is a huge win.
Did he say huge like
huge
Donald?
Huge like Donald Trump. Yeah, I can't quite do it like that, but obviously the Democrats feel pretty good tonight.
So, Brian, you sent me that video yesterday. What did you think when you saw it?
Well, I thought it was, well, we'll just say it's ballsy.
Yeah.
You know,
you can say that on the podcast.
Yeah, I think so. So, I thought it was ballsy. I think he's just calling out a lot of people and a lot of folks that, you know, this stuff has been going on for a long time and it's about time for it to stop. And he's got an agenda that he wants to get through and a budget that he wants to get passed and you know, I don't know. I think sometimes it's kind of like when Reagan came in and just, you know, you kind of just punch him in the face right away. and let it be known that this stuff's not going on anymore. And so I think it's partially that. You know, I don't know necessarily if that's the best method sometimes to try to work with people that you just became their, kind of their boss. But, you know, that's the way he's going with it. So I think for the most part, people that I talked to yesterday that saw the video thought it was really positive. And, you know, this is across both sides. So.
Well, speaking of getting punched in the face, we all worked.
What a great transition, Mark. Awesome. I think we can all agree with this transition. Go ahead.
We all worked at the caucus in one capacity on Saturday. So we were all volunteers. Dave, Sarah, and myself were volunteers for the county, right. Helping to run the caucus as it was. And Brian, of course, was there. As a delegate for one of the primary candidates. So, Sarah, we talked about this on the podcast before. We had no idea what to expect. We had no idea how many people would show up.
No idea.
We got a YouTube video and we got a PDF and that was it. We got there at, what time did you get there?
I got there around 8:30.
Okay. Yeah, I got there around 9 o'clock.
Right.
When we got there, about 9:30, there started to form a line outside, and
when our hearts started beating pretty quickly when we looked out the window and saw that line continue to grow. And then I guess we both looked at each other and was like, okay, well, this is to be expected. This line, you know, it's just the first crazy voters
we
that
thought
are coming.
They would come in, and then we'd have a lull.
Yeah, we'd have a lull, and we'd be able to read a magazine or chat.
There was no lull.
No, Mark. That there was definitely no lull.
Initial thoughts overall.
Initial thoughts. Wow. I guess I've never been so tired as I was at 5 o'clock.
We worked
Saturday.
Hard.
Yeah, we all worked really hard, and actually, I feel like I owe you an apology, because being the, I wasn't in charge of the caucus, but being a volunteer coordinator and trying and recruiting volunteers, which I recruited my husband, obviously, David, and Mark Collier to the job, I'm sorry it turned out to be so difficult, but I think there are, I don't want to be a complete Debbie about it, because I think there's a lot of positive things. We met a lot of nice people. We've got some great Republican voters in Campbell County that were excited to get out and to voice their opinion on this very, very important election.
I'm going to read a little snippet from the AP article. Title of the article, it's by Adam Beam. It says, Kentucky Presidential Caucus Defies Turnout Expectations. I'm going to read a little snippet of that. It says, state party leaders decided not to spend money advertising the caucus, assuming the candidates would do that for them. They even rented a ballroom at a Louisville hotel on Friday in an attempt to tempt candidates to make a campaign stop, but nobody came. Yet, across the state, 98 out of 120 counties saw turnout increases from the 2012 Republican primary. Goes on to say that the largest was in Hickman County, where only 98 votes occurred in 2012, but 338 were cast on Saturday, which was a 240% increase. We obviously had more than 330 people come to Campbell County. Dave, you and I were kind of, we didn't know that we would actually be needed because Sarah did such a good job in getting so many good volunteers there. So we were kind of wandering when we first got there, and then we were kind of thrown into the middle of it. So talk about your experience.
Yeah, that's right, Mark. So that's why I first and say it really was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and hopefully just a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
I'll second that.
But, you know, it's just great seeing democracy at work. So you watch the news and you see people in foreign countries that walk for days to vote. People complain here having to wait 5-10 minutes. People last Saturday were waiting in line for 1 hour, 2 hour, just to cast their ballot in a presidential primary caucus election, basically a primary. So it was just great seeing democracy at work. And what's most inspiring, there were all ages there. I saw a baby, she was 4 months old, up to 80, 90-year-olds that were actually waiting in line and voting. So all
can you
all,
can you imagine having Ada Kate there?
I can. So Mark's referring to, I have a little daughter, she's 7 months old. And I feel for those moms that wait in line. I really do. I know the volunteers did their best to pull up anybody that was maybe elderly or handicapped, but we were so many people all day long. I just think that the volunteers did their best job and we handled the best we could given that situation.
So the biggest regret that I had of the entire day was when Brian Sand came in and he had a huge box of Holtman donuts and he offered one to me and I didn't take it.
Yep, you failed. One time offer, that was it, and it was they were gone. Well,
for some reason I thought, well, there's no way that we're going to go through all those donuts by the how when did you get out of them? When
were you done? Know, they lasted a lot longer than I thought they were going to. I was the dumb one that brought my daughters with me, thinking that it was just going to be a relaxing Saturday where I could show them part of the political process. And so they had their Rubio stickers on and their sign. And then it was just kind of madness. And so thank goodness they didn't eat all the donuts, but like they were there for a lot. I gave them mostly to little kids, which was good because I think they needed them after they were waiting in line that entire time. So,
the big difference between a caucus and a primary is that you're allowed to have representatives there, and you were one. So did you actually correspond with the Rubio campaign at all? Did they give you any direction on what to do?
Yeah, the Rubio campaign was actually really well organized on the state level. It was kind of just a full-on blitz, like 2 weeks before the caucus. And there was emails almost every day, and we had, I think, three or four conference calls about what was going on, and there was people in each area that kind of organized areas of the state that organized the Rubio stuff. He's not a huge spender on campaign stickers and buttons and all that kind of stuff. He's just very frugal when it comes to that, which is one of the reasons I kind of like him as a candidate. But you know, so people were a little disappointed when they came to the caucus, and I literally had two stickers. My girls were wearing the two stickers, and I had one sign hanging on the wall, and that was pretty much what I had. So I was hoping to talk to a lot of folks about exactly the issues.
Were you the only Rubio person there?
I was the only Rubio person there. Yeah.
Who else had a lot of people there?
I would say that there was a couple older ladies with Ted Cruz that were next to me and very nice. Everyone was very nice, but at the end of the day, I think everyone on the caucus is on the same program as far as like whoever is the candidate, they're gonna pretty much back. Solely against somebody like Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. Unfortunately, the Kasich people they allegedly said that they couldn't sit inside, which I don't believe. I think they didn't print out the statewide paper that let them in there or something. So they sat outside, which was
It was really interesting. The Kasich representatives didn't come from the Kasich campaign; they came from a super PAC, and so caucus officials got an email the day before addressing specifically the Kasich Super PAC representatives, and it was up to the discretion of the caucus chair whether to Who was Jeff Kidwell for Campbell County, and so it was up to the discretion of the caucus chair to let the representatives in, and Jeff Kidwell decided not to let them in, and that's why they were sitting outside.
Mm. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to get out and talk to them, so I didn't really know exactly what they were doing outside, but. And then Trump had, I think, maybe one guy that was there holding a sign, shaking it around.
That was Tim Nolan, by the way.
Right. That seemed about right. And so
you were standing. So I was at the threshold of where you were allowed to kind of. It's not electioneer. I don't really know what the term for that is, but
educate voters.
Okay, so you were in eyeshot of me, Brian.
Yeah. All day.
And Tim was like right there by that doorway too. So like to paint a picture, we had a line that was formed out front and snaking all the way through Campbell County High School. It was raining and cold outside. But we were so jam-packed inside that it was hot. And people were, to David's point, waiting an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. I was the first point of contact with Sarah.
Right.
After they got done, you know, waiting through the line. So we kind of took a lot of, you know.
People were tired.
And understandably so.
Understandably so. But I think we did a good job. We tried to infuse a little humor into the situation, but
only got yelled at maybe two or three times.
Oh yeah, maybe a little more than that, okay. Mark. But yeah. I'm glad you only remember two or three times. That's great for you.
And you know what? If you're listening right now, you're the guy that yelled at me that said I let somebody go in front of you. I really didn't. I really didn't do that. You had a last name a C and they had a D and you were just in a different line. That was it.
Yeah.
That was it.
We had a lot of those confusions, but I think we handled them as well as we could, and people got through. Hopefully everyone who wanted to vote could, but we understood that, you know, how frustrating it was to be in line for an hour and a half. And there are some things that we could have changed, I think, to make the process better. I know we've all joked here that hopefully this is a once-in-a-lifetime occurrence, but, you know, it's exciting that Kentucky for once has a voice in the presidential election. Here we are included in Super Saturday. CNN, Fox News was reporting, what's going on in Kentucky? If we were voting in our regular May primary, probably the thing's already shaken out and no one cares who votes in Kentucky. So that was exciting. But if we're going to do it again, and I would only hope that we do it again for that,
yeah.
for that reason alone, I think that there definitely needs to be multiple locations.
Yeah.
So,
and talk about that. Like, who makes that decision? Is it Kentucky? Is it the counties? Who makes that decision?
Well, the Kentucky State Party gave that decision to the county parties themselves. And unfortunately, the county parties throughout Northern Kentucky, including Campbell County, but also Kenton and Boone, decided to only go with one polling location. Now, this is interesting because Jefferson County decided to go with 9 polling locations, and so they had shorter lines, I understand. So if we, you know, I don't think the parties anticipated, just like the article you just read, the parties themselves did not anticipate such great turnout.
And it was. And again, 98 out of 120 counties saw increases from 2012.
Right. So they were thinking, okay, we can handle this in one polling location. Really, probably even doing the math in with 7% turnout, one location would have been difficult. Yeah. So I think everyone probably, I mean, Monday morning quarterbacking, here we are. But multiple locations would have definitely solved the problem.
So it was scheduled to be in Wilder. Brian,
thank goodness.
Brian, tell me what you think might have happened. Would there have been a riot if it happened at Wilder?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. It was getting pretty close to getting there. You know, if it would have been in Wilder at the Wilder City Building, there's no way that people, one, would have been able to get in to vote because the traffic would have been insane.
Nowhere to park.
You know, to be honest, if we looked at it again and we ever had to do this again, you know, definitely multiple locations. I don't know why we wouldn't look at like NKU to possibly be closer to Northern Campbell County. You know, a lot of complaints, at least on my end. I kind of got the brunt of a lot of the stuff because I was the first person that people got to talk to when they've been through the labyrinth. I kind of equated it to like a really bad Kings Island ride where you're waiting outside and you think you get through the doors and you're like, I'm going to vote. And then no, you get inside and there's a whole other labyrinth full of like lines you're waiting in. And then there's like no real cool ride at the end besides the fact that you get to like check a box. But, you know, I think, you know, multiple location would be definitely a necessity. The cool thing about it, and I'll give you like at least my positive takes on what happened. One, I think we had unbelievable volunteers. If we didn't have the volunteers, especially a lot of the elected officials, the young Republicans that were involved, that thing would not have gone well. You know, it was a testament to everybody that was there all day, and I think people understood that everyone was trying to do their best in the situation that was at hand. And I was really impressed with how everybody kind of handled it the day. Everybody was toast by the end of the afternoon. You know, so that was great. I think the number two thing that, you know, probably even the biggest thing that I took away from it was the fact that I have great faith in the people of Kentucky, especially the folks in Campbell County. You know, waiting an hour and a half in line for something like this was not a fun thing to do for a lot of folks, especially the older folks. You know, the follow through was unbelievable. And all I did was keep hearing about how people were so excited that their vote matters. And, you know, most of the time when we get to the primary, the candidate's pretty much selected at that point here in Kentucky. So, you know, you get to to May, we're just checking a box for Romney or, you know, whoever it is. Well, this way, you know, you actually get to voice your opinion on what's going on. And so I don't necessarily think that we want to do a caucus again, but I would think that maybe we take a look as a state party and say, how can we move our primary up to where it makes people feel like their voice matters and really gets people excited about what's going on. And I felt that was really cool about the day was that there were so many people that kept saying, I can't believe there's this many Republicans in Campbell County. Like, and that was cool to see all those people in one place. Not necessarily waiting in line, but at least it was like, you know, usually when you go to your polling place and it's just a school or a church or wherever you're going, you might be one of the only people there when you're there for the 5 minutes that you're there. And so you're kind of like, oh, I'm just kind of on my own. And
do you give poll people workers. Do you give people the evil eye if you don't know who they are?
Just, you know, no. I will say, and we were talking about this earlier, that you think that you know everybody in your community, and it's really amazing. Like, I was standing there, and it was, I maybe knew one out of every 20, and you're just kind of like, wow, this is pretty
incredible. Even in Fort Thomas, though, like, as small as a community where we're right over 16,000 people, I grew up here my whole life, and I meet somebody new or talk to somebody new every single week in this city. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
So it's just, to your point, like, yeah, I mean, I didn't know that many people there. I thought, to paint a picture of what we went through as caucus volunteers, we got there at between 8:30 and 9 o'clock. Voters started coming in at 10 o'clock.
Actually, some people started showing up at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. 10 o'clock till, when did we get our last voter? 4:30, 4:45?
I think we were busy right till 4:40.
No bathroom breaks,
no
sitting down, no food, no water,
yeah,
nothing. And we did the best that we could talking to people and trying to, you know, thank them for voting. And that was part of the YouTube video, was make sure you had a smile on your face.
Yeah.
It was like Disney World all day.
My face hurt from smiling so much. And I didn't watch the video, but it was just to the point where we were almost like, the folks that were representing the candidates were almost trying to do damage control. You're just like trying to be nice, understanding that they've been waiting for a long time, make sure that they have their IDs, you know, and those type of things ready, so that way they're ready to go in and vote and they're not holding up the line. And so, you know, on our end of things, as far as like people that were representing, you know, the candidates, you didn't really get a ton of time to talk to people about the issues because they didn't want to hold up the line and they'd already been waiting for an hour and a half. So you're kind of just like, hey, let's get this thing moving and get you guys in there. So,
this AP, you know, story, I think, probably tells the story better than anybody else. Obviously, like, each individual paper is going to have a bias. So, like, you know, the Courier-Journal is going to take a slant on it, where the Inquirer might take a certain slant on it, and we saw some Inquirer reporters there as well. So this obviously said that it defied turnout expectations, David. When you see, and I'm sure that you saw some you know, opposite views on Facebook or Twitter or in other publications as well. Where do you think that negative connotation of where that caucus, where do you think that's coming from?
I think the negative connotation was people were, they didn't expect it, right? So this is a new event for everyone here in Kentucky. They had to wait in line. As I said earlier, people are not used to waiting in lines of votes. You know, in America here, we have this excellent, unbelievable system where you can walk up and you can vote within 5 minutes. People didn't expect that. But one quick thing I want to comment on is going actually back to my good friend here, Mr. Sand, is that we have some great elected officials here in Campbell County that were there that day. People like Joe Fisher, Tom Lampe, Brian Painter, Will Schroeder, Steve Franzen.
Tanya Jack,
yes. They were there all day working their butts off. So without them, we would have heard more negative comments, honestly.
And a lot of young Republicans, too, kind of stepped up.
A lot of young
Republicans,
yeah. So while the volunteers, yeah, we had some negative comments there. I think as the day progressed and people became aware of the turnout size issues, attitudes improved.
Yeah, I think, you know, we kept thinking that there was going to be a drop-off on people, and I kept looking and seeing that the line was, like, dying down. And I'm like, surely at 2 o'clock when UK plays, like, it's going to die down. Like, there's going to be people.
Well, I did. That was a big thing. People were coming up to me and saying, what are you doing having this during the UK game? Like, we had anything to do with this.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was nice that we had the UK game playing on all the TVs in the cafeteria.
We did. So I was so busy, though. And you know how big of a UK fan I am.
Yeah, you did not see.
I didn't know what happened. Minute, but it was a very nice surprise when I saw that we had, like, a 20-point victory.
Right.
Skull played great. I mean.
That was good news.
Yeah, that was great news. And then That later that night, we had the Education Foundation dance.
Yeah, what a fun. Yeah.
I had
who are you from Wayne's World?
I was Wayne.
You're Wayne. Of course. Yeah, but I couldn't recognize you because of that really awesome wig you're wearing.
I did have a mullet wig on. It was ugly and uncomfortable, and it was not fun. So we should probably talk about the actual results.
Yeah. Let's see. I think Dave.
Yeah, I can comment on the Campbell County results. Let me get the state ride
results. Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, let's do that.
So after all ballots were counted, absentees.
Because you saw the
count. I saw the count that occurred. So just people, to kind of clarify to the people out there, there were some questions about the security of our ballot system. So we had a big ballot box, and the ballots were actually counted initially on site. So we had three individuals that oversaw the counting of all the ballots.
By a scanning machine.
But additionally, those ballots will be sent to Frankfurt, or actually they're already in Frankfurt, and they'll be counted again. Just to ensure everyone that had voted, your vote was counted. There was no voter fraud, I promise you that. But everyone's vote was counted, so at the end of the day, Ted Cruz came out number one in Campbell County with a little over 1,100 votes, followed by Donald Trump. And surprisingly, Ohio's current governor came in third, John Kasich, at 900. And then maybe a little surprisingly was Marco Rubio.
I think Brian needed more.
I think everyone was so mad by the time they got to me. They're like, whoever that Rubio guy character is, I'm not voting for him.
You needed more donuts.
I had to have like donuts for days. And I had my two little girls there early on in the day, so I thought that was going to help lessen the blow a little bit. But
well, there's definitely, your girls are so cute that there's definitely a bump in that vote because of the girls. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. So who knows? If you weren't there, who knows what Rubio's numbers would have been.
But, yeah.
You know, I'm with Dave. I was surprised by Kasich's number three placement. And, you know, he wasn't that far from Trump, to be honest. Like, he was very close to being number two. I think it was the absentee ballots when they were factored in kind of distanced them a little bit. But for a while, they're really close.
Kasich hasn't done a lot of favors to Northern Kentucky either. I mean,
right.
I remember him just being pretty blunt, and that's how he is. And I get what he does. But like when, for instance, Omnicare moved from Covington right across the river to Cincinnati, he basically kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, you know, it's competition. And yeah. I mean, I get that, but
that issue comes up a lot with the Kasich team, and I work in Cincinnati. And so I'm surrounded by pro Kasich voters and people on his team. And so their response is, well, Kentucky took Omnicare from us first.
Okay.
So that must make them feel a little better about it. Maybe that's why we didn't get too much sympathy.
Political systems today.
Right.
Where we're talking about who did what first and, you know, and size of people's hands.
It all goes back to kindergarten, Mark.
Golden rule.
Yeah. Yeah. Though we forget that sometimes. But hopefully it will be remembered.
Well, so Ted Cruz did very well in all three Northern Kentucky counties. Donald Trump took the entire, or, you know, the most delegates from the entire state. He got 35%. Ted Cruz across the state of Kentucky got 31%. Rubio did better statewide than he did in Northern Kentucky and picked up seven delegates, 16%, as did Kasich with 14.
You know, it's nice that it's not, well, I guess you can see it both ways, but it's nice that it's not winner takes all. At least not right now. So Trump took 17 delegates from Kentucky, Cruz 15. So even though Trump won the state, he only had two more delegates than Cruz coming out. And then Rubio and Kasich both got seven. But Florida is coming up, and that's winner take all. It takes all, and then Ohio as well. So
those are big states.
They're going to be very big states, and they're both coming up March 15th.
So, Dave, if Donald Trump, who's obviously leading the delegate count right now, if he doesn't win Florida and Ohio, what do you think happens next?
Yeah, I think then very possibly we're going to see an open or a broker convention in Cleveland come this summer.
And it could have been in
It should have been in Cincinnati, but unfortunately it's not. But still, it's going to be regionally based here. Ohio, our neighbors to the north, are still going to be excited about it. Kentucky's going to get some spillover, hopefully.
Well, I don't know. You think so?
I was really thinking, like, for this caucus, to be honest with you, with the Cincinnati market being so us being in the Cincinnati market, that we would get a little bit more candidate love as far as some of the candidates stopping by. I mean, if you get a Rubio or Cruz coming through.
Weren't some of them supposed to?
Yeah, I think Trump was in Louisville like maybe Tuesday.
My man, Jeff Ruby, said, no, no, Mr. Trump, you are not coming to this restaurant.
And we may see Trump here in Cincinnati, I think, in the coming months here.
In the coming days.
Maybe. We'll see what happens. Could be a big event for us.
Yeah. So yeah, I think I was kind of hoping with us bumping up with the caucus that we would get a little bit more love as far as some candidate visits and stuff like that, especially in Northern Kentucky with us being so close to Cincinnati in Ohio. So you know, I thought they kind of missed an opportunity there to kind of come here and be like the only show in town,
right,
and get on all the channels in Cincinnati where they're going to need votes in Ohio as well. I kind of related that information to the Rubio campaign. It just didn't seem like it was something that they were interested in doing. So
I think people don't realize that Kentucky is so close to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I mm-hmm. think people forget. I mean, we're in Fort.
Well, the Thomas. Cincinnati airport is in Kentucky,
right? Sure. And maybe people don't realize that you could kill two birds with one stone. But missed opportunity, I guess.
John Kasich, he should know that.
He should know that, right? Shouldn't he? Since he knows that he's stealing Omnicare from us.
Yeah, how much more does he have to do in Ohio? he's the governor.
Do you think he's going to win Ohio?
He has to win Ohio.
He says he's going to.
He has to win Ohio, in my head. If he doesn't win Ohio, you can't win your own state, just like Rubio. If he doesn't win Florida, I think, you know, you might as well cash it in.
Is there any, and Dave talked about this, with a brokered convention scenario, do you see any scenario where Donald Trump is not the Republican nominee?
I think if Kasich wins Ohio and Rubio wins Florida, then you're going to go to a brokered convention, just like Dave said.
And then what?
And it's going to be the greatest.
Everybody says
it's,
that.
It's going to be the most unbelievable situation ever. But this campaign has been out of the ordinary the entire time. So, you know, why wouldn't it go to the craziest portion of where it could possibly go?
I think it really is going to depend on how close Trump can get. Because I just don't believe, even if he can't get over the 1,200 delegate threshold, if he's anywhere near that number, I think that the Republican Party would be definitely shooting itself in the foot if they drafted someone else. Because I don't trust that he wouldn't run as an independent.
Well, he said he wouldn't, but...
He said he would, and then he said he wouldn't. Yeah, and even if, let's say he doesn't, how much faith are the voters that voted for him going to have in their party to go out and support who they decide to be the nominee in November? So I'm a little concerned about that. But, you know, currently, I don't know if we've seen the results from tonight.
David turned off the TV.
No, actually, it's still on. It's on. Peeking over there.
He won Mississippi and Michigan.
So Trump's won... Yeah, Mississippi and Michigan. Are there two more? Who else are voting today?
You know, I don't know.
But those are two big states. He's going to come away with some delegates there. Cruz has caught up with him. I mean, now they're in the 300 mark, at least. I know before today it was 380 to 300 or somewhere in that range. So at least it looked like Cruz was giving him some sort of run for his money. But even if we get to that brokered convention, because he hasn't reached 1,200, I think the Republican Party is going to have a lot of unity issues.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the Cruz thing kind of surprised me a little bit. When we were walking up, you know, to volunteer for the day, I was with an elected official, and I was kind of half kidding. I didn't expect him to tell me who he was going to vote for, but I asked him who he was going to vote for, and he told me he was cruising. And that was pretty much the temperature of the room that we were in, which was, you know, mainly elected officials that are, you would think, tied into that kind of thing. I asked one in particular who he was voting for, and he said he woke up that day and he didn't know. So he called, you know, two or three people that he trusted, insider type people, and they said Ted Cruz. And, you know, that kind of carried the day. So take that for what it's worth.
Right. Well, yeah. I like the phrase cruising.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he actually say that?
No, that's got to be a bumper. No, I didn't trademark that. No, that's got to be on a bumper sticker already.
That has to be. I mean, yeah. I think that's way better than like trusted or whatever.
Yeah.
Let's go cruising. Especially in Florida. Maybe that, yeah. Anyway.
Why Florida, Sarah?
I don't know. Because
do you think people just
sunny and warm and you're in a convertible on the way to the pole, so you're cruising? I don't know.
So, no, that's good. This is what this is for. So, Overall, let's take one snapshot from the whole event, put it in one sentence, sum up the Kentucky caucus March 5th of 2016. David Cameron.
It was a once-in-a-lifetime exhausting experience that really showed that democracy is alive in Campbell County.
Sarah.
Okay, were we supposed to have one word or...
No, phrase? One sentence. One sentence.
One sentence. Gosh, I can't come up... there's so many emotions right now from me.
What do you picture? What are you going to picture in 5 years when somebody, you know, talks about this, that day?
Just the excitement that everyone was feeling about being able to have their voice count in this election.
Brian?
I'm going to remember in 5 years how tired I was at the end of the day. That's the first thing I'm going to remember. And then the second thing I'll remember is that, you know, I think I talked about it earlier about how, just like Sarah said, I think that I was impressed on the people of Campbell County and how long they would wait to vote and how their vote really mattered this time around. And I think there's an opportunity on our end as a state to take a look at that, because I feel like if your voters don't, this is the reason people aren't going to vote, because they don't feel like their vote matters. And so we saw firsthand on Saturday that people were excited that their vote mattered. And so that's an issue on a statewide scale. And I think that's something that needs to be addressed. You know, when your vote matters, people show up and they're excited about being there. And that was the first time that I think I can say that I've honestly been around that kind of atmosphere and people were really excited.
Scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best possible scenario, best success that it could have happened, 1 being a total disaster. What do you put it at?
I give it like a 6 or 7.
Sarah?
I give it a 5 at the most, because I think, again, multiple polling places.
That would have kicked it up.
Multiple polling places, it probably would have been an 8 or a 9.
Dave?
I'm going to give it a 6, only because people were not able to vote that day that wanted to vote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in the parking lot and people were turning around, and that just kills me. So 6 because people were unable to vote.
And if, just to clarify, county was the one that kind of said, you know, we're only going to have 1. Boone County, Kent County did it as well.
Right.
To their defense, they had no idea what to expect, but yeah. Maybe,
yeah,
you know,
I think Fayette County had 4.
Fayette County had 4. Jefferson County had 9.
But right. To Jefferson County's credit, they have a paid person that kind of handled the caucus for them. And additionally, I spoke to some officials in Campbell County, and they were expecting low single digits. We actually ended up over 11%. In my estimation, it would have been well over 16, 17% with shorter lines.
And maybe a takeaway from this whole thing, too, is why in the hell are we not having regular election day on a Saturday?
Yeah, that's
yeah,
a great,
multiple
yeah.
people said that to me. You know, you get all the reactions from people immediately when you're there. And this was easier for people, like as far as people's schedules, to be able to get in and vote. You know, people had soccer games and stuff with their kids, so the hour and a half wait didn't really help.
Well, them. Yeah, there was
but,
a truncated.
But having it on a Saturday, I mean, multiple people said this is the best thing.
If ever, you open so. It up from 6 a.m. to, you know, 6 p.m., 12 hours like they normally do on a Saturday, I mean, what do you think, Sarah, what do you think the turnout would be if they were going to do it on a Saturday, regular election time, in November, what do you think the turnout
yeah,
is?
I think the turnout would have been over 30%. But then again, when I saw all those people on Saturday, I was saying, oh, the turnout has to be 30%. It really felt that way. But
There's no way that we could have possibly taken more
no,
people.
There's no
I was really worried that it was going to get to 4 o'clock and that we wouldn't have people in the building and they would still be outside. And I didn't know when do you say you're cutting the line and like...
Well, what did we end up doing? If you were in line...
Yeah, if you were in line by 4 o'clock, you were able to vote. And actually, because of the unexpected turnout, the party sent an emergency call to all the caucus chairs at like 3 o'clock, making sure everyone was on the same page as to how they were closing down the line. So we were supposed to put a caucus official at the end of the line at 4 o'clock.
Was that you, Dave?
I was. That was not me. No.
Oh, I thought
I was busy. I thought I heard busy Sarah. Checking people.
And... Yeah, Sarah gave that order in just as Dave always does. He ignores it.
So. I defer to the caucus chair and an appropriate individual.
Yeah, we had it handled. Dave was busy checking in voters in the W line, I believe.
That's which was the best letter. If you have a W, thank you. Yes, that many of you out there.
Yes, it was. And I'll tell you the worst was. What was the worst?
I think the worst was the S.
S.
R-S-T. Yes.
Lots of Smiths out there in
Campbell. R-S-T. And then, but then we would have like runs of like
runs, yeah.
10 H's in a row. Right.
It was crazy.
And then like, what do you do? I mean, there was no room at that entryway.
Yeah.
There definitely was no room at the entryway. Believe me. I know.
We did pretty well directing traffic, Mark. Yeah, we were.
Third table, first set of books.
Yeah, you look
second table, second set of books.
You look like a guy at the airport on the runway, like distracting planes everywhere. But you were like just
give me a description of what I looked like because I know that you saw me.
Like your face through the process was like one of like I can't describe exactly how your face was. At some point, you just kind of were like I remember you put like your fingers to your head like that, like, almost like it was a gun. Like I was, and this is it, like one. So we still had like three more hours to go, and I just looked at him and I shook my head and I was just like, it is what it is. At that point, you're just gonna try to make it through the day.
But the day went fast.
But the day, it went fast. Yeah. But I have to compliment you, Mark. Your level of commitment and dedication to the task at hand was very impressive.
Well, that's typically how I do things. If I'm gonna do it, you might as well do it the best that you can.
Right. And not stop, and not eat, and not drink, or sit down. You gotta get through all the voters.
I recharged my batteries. I had 2 hours to prepare for a party that night. And then I had one beer, and I think I might have been drunk after one beer. Dressed as Wayne Campbell.
Nice.
With my pregnant wife, who was dressed as Garth Algar.
And she looked awesome.
She did look great.
Yeah.
So, David Cameron, Sarah Cameron, Brian Sand, thank you very much for being on For Thomas Matters Radio. For Thomas Matters Radio, always brought to you by Omega Processing Solutions. Main sponsor on ForThomasMatters.com at the header page of ForThomasMatters.com, blue and yellow. Are you an independent business owner looking for a new way to process credit cards? Omega Processing Solutions, headquartered right here in Fort Thomas, Kentucky, has a straightforward application and approval process that makes it really, really simple. It's a two-page application. They act upon it really, really quickly. They never outsource any of the critical functions, which means that Omega Processing Solutions can get you from application to up and running in a very timely manner. To schedule an appointment with one of their professional account executives, call 866-888-9724, 866-888-9724, or send an email to them at info@omegap.com. And hey, if you see Scott Anderson or Todd McHugh or my girl Betsy Downard of Omega Processing Solutions, tell them thank you for sponsoring For Thomas Matters Radio. They have truly been a great partner to work with, and we're really, really proud to have Omega Processing Solutions be the sole sponsor of For Thomas Matters Radio. Until next time, again, this is Mark Collier for Thomas Matters Radio. You can always subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a quick like and a review. Helps other people find it a lot easier. We'll talk to you next time.